As Jack and McNeil straightened up from their crouch, the dead eyes of the corpses followed them. There was a slow stirring in the mound of bodies, and all the hundreds of corpses opened their eyes and turned their blood-smeared faces to look at the living interlopers who had stumbled upon them. McNeil felt a cold hand clutch at his heart as his imagination showed him how it must have been. An endless line of walking dead, making their way through the dark tunnels and along the narrow ledge, and finally filing into this cave to drop and lie still. And then more coming to fall on top of the first, and on until the mound of bodies was complete. The last few would have had to climb the mound to reach the top. McNeil and Jack backed away. The corpses followed them with their unblinking eyes.
Bait. The gold and the missing bodies just bait to lure us down here and destroy us.
But why go to so much trouble? What makes us so important? Why didn't the beast just drive us mad like he did the others?
I don't know. There must be something the beast wants from us. Maybe we've got something it could harm it.
His eyes widened suddenly.
Of course. The infernal device doesn't want all of us, just Hammer and his damn sword.
Wait a minute.
Jack glanced nervously at the watching liches.
This can't be the beast's doing. He's still asleep, remember?
It's not human. Its mind doesn't work like ours. It must have recognized Wolvesbane when Hammer first came to the border fort to deliver the gold. The beast knew how powerful the sword was and saw it as a threat. So it sent its dreams out to destroy the people in the fort, to gather some bait that would lure the device back so that the beast could destroy it. Get into the tunnel, Jack! We've got to collect Hammer and then get the hell out of here. If the device is the key, we can't risk losing it to these creatures. Go on! Move it! I'll be right behind you with the lantern.
Jack nodded quickly and dived into the narrow tunnel. McNeil gave him a count of five and then hurried after him. Duncan scrambled along the tunnel as fast as he could on hands and knees, but even as he struggled through the tunnel in his little pool of light, his imagination replayed the last thing he'd seen as he turned to the tunnel mouth, the great pile of bodies shifting and stirring like so many seething maggots. The dead were rising to walk again. Jack and McNeil scrambled desperately through the tunnel. It seemed much longer than it had on the first trip through. Jack and Duncan barely reached the halfway stage when they heard something else enter the tunnel behind them. Somehow they found a little more strength and speed, and a few moments later the tunnel mouth fell away behind them as they threw themselves out into the outer cave. Hammer spun around, startled by their sudden entrance. He took one look at their shocked faces, and his hand fell automatically to the sword at his side.
What is it? What have you found?
Walking dead men! We've got to get out of here!
And leave the gold?
The gold will keep! Those liches want your sword, Hammer. The device! The beast must be frightened of it. That's why it had the gold brought down here, to lure you into its clutches.
McNeil stopped suddenly and looked back at the tunnel, and as he did, a bare, dead white arm snaked out of the tunnel mouth. He put his lantern down on the floor and drew his sword. He swung his sword with both hands and cut clean through the lich's wrist. The severed hand flew away across the cave. It scrabbled briefly on the floor and then pulled itself back toward McNeil like a huge pale spider. Jack kicked it away. The lich burst out of the tunnel mouth and threw itself at McNeil. Its pallid skin was flecked with long, dried blood, but no blood pumped from the handless stump. Hammer handed Jack his torch and drew the sword at his hip. McNeil cut at the dead man's neck with his sword, but the lich blocked the blow with its bare arm. The lich just smiled. McNeil backed away as the lich reached for his throat, and the dead man went after him. Another lich crawled out of the tunnel. McNeil cut again at the advancing lich, but still it kept coming. Hammer moved in beside McNeil. He cut at the lich's legs. It finally fell to the ground as a half-severed leg collapsed under it. But already the second lich was moving toward McNeil, and more of the dead were emerging from the tunnel mouth. Hammer and McNeil tried to stand their ground, but faced with an endless stream of opponents that wouldn't stay dead, they were forced back, step by step. The only way to stop the liches was to hamstring or behead them, and even then the crippled bodies would drag themselves along the floor and try to pull down the living that dared stand against them. Most of the liches had once been men, but there were also women and even children. McNeil found it almost impossible to cut down the first child, but then he looked into the dead child's eyes and saw there a blind, unreasoning malevolence that had nothing human in it. After that, he dealt with the dead children as methodically as he took on the adults, and with every child lich he faced, he renewed his promise of vengeance against the beast that used them in this way. Hammer didn't seem to care who he was fighting. He swung his sword with grim competence, his only expression a slight satisfied smile. Jack stood to one side, holding his torch out before him and waiting for any lich that managed to get past the other two. He'd already guessed his knife wouldn't be much use against the dead, but he'd had some success with the torch. The creature's cold flesh felt no pain from the blazing brand, but their hair and clothing were bone dry and burned fiercely. Already the cave was brightly lit from half a dozen burning corpses that thrashed weakly on the floor as the fire slowly consumed them. The dead crowded into the cave from the narrow tunnel, forcing the three defenders back. The cave floor lay strewn with mutilated liches that still crawled determinedly after their prey. McNeil felt an old fear stir within him, threatening to unman him. The same fear he felt when the demons came swarming out of the endless night in a nightmarish assault that seemed to go on forever. Fear and panic tore at his courage until he wanted to scream at the liches, but somehow he held on to his self-control and continued his slow, cautious retreat to the tunnel behind him. Hammer moved back with him, and Jack guarded their rear with his flaring torch. And still the dead came crowding into the cave, their pale faces contorted by the dark dreams of the beast that controlled them.
We can't hold him off much longer! Draw your other sword, Hammer! Draw the damn sword!
Yes, I don't seem to have any choice anymore, do I?
Hammer cut viciously at a lich as it reached for him with clawing hands and decapitated it. The head rolled away across the floor, its mouth working silently. The headless body staggered back and forth, groping blindly about for its enemy, but the other liches jostled it out of the way. Hammer sheathed his sword. He reached up and grasped the long sword hilt behind his left shoulder. His mouth twisted as though tasting something infinitely bitter. The sword hilt seemed to fit itself into his hand as though it belonged there. He drew the long sword from its silver scabbard with one supple movement and held the 6 feet of gleaming steel out before him as though it were weightless. The long blade glowed brightly with a sick yellow light.
Wolfsbane. Wolfsbane is loose in the world again.
The liches stopped their advance. Their empty eyes fastened on the glowing longsword in silent fascination as something else studied the infernal device through their dead eyes and knew it for what it was. The Hell Sword had been brought down into the depths of the earth, and now they would take it and bury it so that the beast need never fear it again. The liches surged forward, hands outstretched, and Hammer met them with Wolfsbane. The glowing blade swept back and forth with inhuman speed, cutting through the liches as though they were nothing more than wisps of smoke. They fell helplessly before Hammer's attack, screaming silently as the sword cut through flesh and bone alike. Their dead flesh decayed and fell away into corruption at Wolfsbane's touch. And soon the cave floor was littered with fragments of rotting flesh and discolored bone. But still the liches came swarming out of the narrow tunnel, their numbers growing faster than Hammer could destroy them. Hammer and McNeil and Scarecrow Jack continued to back away, fighting desperately all the while, knowing that if they gave the dead an opening, even for a moment, the liches would tear them apart. Hammer lunged back and forth like a man possessed, Wolfsbane glowing more and more brightly as the dead fell before it and did not rise again. Jack and McNeil defended his blind sides as best they could, for Hammer seemed to have no thought for anything but attack. And still the dead came on, driven by the beast's dark dreams. Hundreds of men and women and children had died in the border fort, and Hammer and McNeil and Jack couldn't destroy them fast enough to stem the tide. Step by step, they were forced back out of the cave and down the tunnel, and finally out onto the narrow ledge itself, looking out over the long drop to the cavern floor. Jack went first along the ledge, carrying the torch, then McNeil with his lantern, and finally Hammer, blocking the lich's way with Wolfsbane. The infernal device glowed blindingly against the darkness, its bitter yellow light reflecting from the thousands of crystals embedded in the cavern walls. The three men backed slowly away along the narrow ledge, and the dead came after them. Down below, deep in the earth, something stirred in its sleep. Flint and Wild and the Dancer swung their swords with aching arms, fighting on long after most would have collapsed from sheer exhaustion. Their swords grew heavier every time they raised them, but they wouldn't give up. The trolls came swarming through the doorway in a never-ending stream, their blood-red eyes glowing hungrily. tall, bony cadavers lay scattered across the bloody floor, but as yet none of the creatures got past the defenders to reach the trapdoor. Only a few could get through the door at a time, and so far Flint and Wild and the Dancer had managed to keep the trolls bottled up by the doorway. But they all knew it was only a matter of time before one of them fell, and then they would be unable to hold the trolls back. The Dancer was having the time of his life. His sword was everywhere, a bright, shining blur that mowed through the crowding trolls like a newly sharpened scythe through wheat. He grinned broadly. His eyes blazed with a dark and deadly joy. He was doing what he was best at, doing what he was born to do, and loving every minute of it. The overwhelming odds just gave a spice to the occasion. He was the Dancer, and he was content. Flint fought at his side, substituting strength and stubbornness to match his skill and speed. She kept turning the situation over and over in her mind as she fought, searching for a solution, an answer that would give them victory over the trolls, knowing all the while that this time there was no answer, no way out. They were doing all they could, and the odds were that wasn't going to be enough. Tough. That was the way it went sometimes, especially if you were a ranger. She fought on, ignoring the pain and blood from a dozen minor wounds. It wasn't over till it was over, and just maybe McNeil would get lucky and kill the beast. Wild fought on Flint's other side and wished he hadn't run out of arrows so early. He was good with a sword, but he was much better with a bow. Besides, using a bow was a damn sight less dangerous than getting into close quarters with a sword. He hacked at a troll and clove its skull from brow to jaw. The creature collapsed with a startled expression on its bony face, and Wild grinned nastily. Stupid-looking things. He'd teach them to get between him and his share of the gold. He fought on and wished he'd kept at least one arrow for the Dancer. Still, he needed the Dancer's fighting skills for the moment. Maybe later, when the trolls had been taken care of. Yeah, maybe later. He swung his sword, and the trolls surged about him, trying to drag him down. Blood soaked his shirt, only some of it from dead trolls. Constance chanted one spell after another. Her throat was raw, and her aching head swam as she fought to make the last few remnants of her magic do far more than it was ever meant to. The few trolls that got past the fighters at the door shriveled up like moths in a flame as they drew near the witch. One troll kept on coming anyway, even while its flesh ran like wax down a candle. Constance gestured sharply, and the troll exploded in a shower of blood and guts. A stabbing pain began in the witch's forehead, just above her left eye. Blood spurted from her nose. She was pushing her magic to its limits, and she was paying the toll. She'd once seen a witch overstrain herself and die of a cerebral hemorrhage. Not a pretty sight. She swayed unsteadily on her feet, gripped by hot and cold flushes, and fought to remain conscious. If she passed out now, the trolls would make short work of her. Besides, the others needed her. Some of the dizziness passed, and she drew her magic about her again. The trolls weren't the only danger that had to be faced. Thin strands of mist had begun to form in the cellar. The trolls used the fog as a gateway into the real world, and if it established itself in the cellar, they would be able to appear from anywhere in the room. The defenders would be overrun in seconds. Constance wrapped herself in her power and concentrated on a single spell to keep the mists from forming. The trolls recognized her sudden vulnerability and threw themselves at the three fighters in a flurry of teeth and claws. One of the creatures broke through and leaped at the witch with gaping jaws. Constance hit it in the throat with her fist. The collection of heavy rings on her fingers made an effective knuckle duster, and the troll fell choking to the floor. Constance stamped down hard and broke the creature's neck. The witch smiled briefly, and then went back to concentrating on her magic. Two more trolls forced their way in and attacked Flint. She killed one, but couldn't react fast enough to stop the other. It knocked her to the ground and stooped over her. Wild cut down the troll before him and looked up to see the troll bending over Flint. The troll cut at her face with its claws. She turned her head aside at the last moment, saving her face, but the long claws ripped off her left ear. She fell back, blood running thickly down her neck as pain blazed in her head. The troll grinned and took her throat in its heavy hands. Flint tried to break its hold and couldn't.
Jessica!
Wild leaped at the troll. His weight tore the creature away from Flint, and the two of them crashed to the floor. Wild landed awkwardly, and his elbow jarred painfully on the solid stone. His hand instantly went numb, and he watched despairingly as the sword flew from his unfeeling fingers. The troll reared over him, huge and hideous. Wild slammed a punch into its gut. The troll ripped into Wild's belly and out again in a flurry of blood and guts. The troll left Wild shuddering on the floor, curled around the awful wound. Blood poured past his clutching hands and pooled around him. Flint snatched up her sword from the floor and ran the troll through from behind. It died, trying to clutch at the blade as Flint jerked it free. Flint spared Wild a single glance and then had to turn back to take her place at the dancer's side again. He disposed of the three trolls that were bothering him, but even he was having a hard time holding the doorway single-handed. Flint could feel blood trickling down her neck, and her head screamed in pain with every move that jarred it, but she couldn't stop and rest, even for a moment. The dancer needed her. She cut savagely at the nearest troll and smiled coldly as it fell to the floor, clutching at its torn throat. Another troll took its place. The dancer backed away from the door a single step, and Flint fell back with him. Constance stood very still, battling the forming mists with the last of her magic. Flint and the dancer fell back another step. More trolls forced their way into the cellar. The three rangers fought on, knowing it was hopeless, but fighting anyway. There was nothing else they could do. Deep in the earth below the fort, the beast stirred. The great cavern above it shook violently. Massive slabs of stone cracked and groaned as they moved against each other, disturbed from their resting places for the first time in uncounted centuries. Jagged cracks appeared in the cavern walls, and loose earth fell from the ceiling in a steady rain. McNeil clutched at the cavern wall as the ledge shifted suddenly under his feet. Thin cracks appeared in the stone. Scarecrow Jack got thrown off balance. Jack fell awkwardly and threw his torch away to cling tightly to the heaving stone with both hands. The blazing brand disappeared down into the darkness, gone. McNeil quickly put his lantern down and moved back to help Jack. Hammer managed to keep his footing, but the liches kept pressing forward, undeterred by the destruction around them. It was all Hammer could do to hold them off. All around him, the cavern walls shifted and groaned, and there was a faint, continuous rumble from somewhere far away, deep down under the cavern. The liches suddenly stopped pouring out onto the ledge from the tunnel mouth. Hammer slowly lowered his sword, and then leaned on it tiredly. McNeil began to breathe a little more easily. The dead from the border fort had pushed their intended prey all the way back to the mouth of the original tunnel before the last of them fell away. McNeil looked at Hammer and winced. The infernal device was glowing brightly, almost too brightly to bear. Hammer was leaning on the sword with his eyes closed. His sides were heaving and his face was slick with sweat. For Hammer, the nightmare wasn't over. It was just beginning. Hammer screwed his eyes shut rather than look at the sword he held. McNeil and Scarecrow Jack looked at each other. The liches might be gone, but the cavern was still breaking up. This was no place to be hanging around. There was no sign of the beast, and McNeil couldn't see one good reason to stay in the cavern a single moment longer than was necessary. He moved forward to stand facing Hammer. The outlaw gave no sign he even knew McNeil was there.
Hammer! What is it, Hammer? What's wrong?
It's the sword!
Hammer's face twisted. His knuckles were white where they gripped the sword hilt.
It's the damn sword. I used it for too long, tempted it too much. It's awake.
McNeil glared back at Jack, who nodded jerkily.
He's right, Sergeant. The sword is alive and aware. I can feel it.
McNeil turned back to Hammer.
Sheathe the sword. We don't need it anymore, Hammer. It's all right to sheathe it now.
You damned fool. I can't sheathe it. The bloody thing's awake and it's hungry. You never understood the power in this sword, McNeil. There's power here beyond your worst nightmares. Power to destroy all the world and leave it nothing but a rotting bowl of filth. And the sword wants me to use that power.
McNeil didn't want to believe Hammer, but he had no choice. There was a power in the Hell Sword. It droned with the sword's brilliant light, a force so strong even he could sense its presence. Duncan started to grab the sword away from Hammer while he was still distracted. Hammer immediately moved back out of reach and leveled the sword at McNeil's breast.
Stay away from me. Try that again and I'll kill you. I'll have to.
Hammer!
I can control the device. I can. I just need a little more time.
McNeil and Scarecrow Jack looked down into the darkness, and a vastly wide line of silver fire suddenly flared far below on the cavern floor. Hundreds of yards wide, it stretched from one side of the cavern to the other, splitting the darkness in two. And then, slowly, the split grew wider. The shining silver light became brighter still as the split widened into a broad band of light. The silver glare filled the cavern, painfully bright and piercing. It wasn't until a vast golden circle moved into the light from behind the darkness that McNeil realized he was looking at the opening of a single gigantic eye. The huge dark eyelids crawled open, revealing the whole floor of the cavern to be one great eye. The enormous golden pupil stared up at McNeil with monumental disdain. He wanted to look away, but couldn't. He was held by the sheer immensity of the eye below him, fixing him with the awful stare of an ancient and unforgiving god. "It's too big," thought McNeil dazedly. "It's just too big. Nothing could be that size. That eye must be hundreds of yards across." He tried to visualize the size of the beast and couldn't. It was just too big, too large for his human mind to cope. There were giants in the earth in those days. Something beat on the air like a great commanding voice, silent but imperative. McNeil stared down into the beast's eye, and the unspoken voice called to him, demanding that he surrender to it. The longer he looked, the more he wanted to. Helpless tears streamed down his cheeks, his eyes dazzled by the silver glare illuminating the cavern, but unable to look away. McNeil stared into the beast's eye, and the world grew soft and dim. All the things that troubled him, all the things that scared and angered him, seemed to drift away. Nothing mattered. Nothing mattered at all except listening to the silent voice and doing as it commanded. He was safe and warm and comfortable, and nothing would ever hurt him again. All he had to do was obey the beast in all things, and it would set him free from the cares of the world. All he had to do was give up his duty. Duty. The word tolled in his head like a bell. He had served as a ranger because of his duty to the forest land. He fought the demons in the long night because of that duty. He stood at his post and he didn't run because of his duty and his honor. In that moment, McNeil finally understood why he didn't desert his post all those years ago, and why he never would have, no matter what. He felt racked with fear then as now, but did not mean disgrace. Only the foolish and the dead never feel fear. Duty and honor are important because they give us courage, the courage we need to do what must be done, to face what must be faced. McNeil tore his gaze away from the great shining eye. He turned his back on it and pressed his face against the cold, unyielding stone of the cavern wall. His heart raced as though he'd just run a mile in full armor. Sweat ran down his face and stung his eyes. He'd come close to losing his mind and his soul, and he knew it. He clenched his hands into fists. He made himself breathe slowly and deeply, and a little of his calm returned. He turned away from the cavern wall and put his back to it. The bright silver glare hit him again, but this time the unspoken voice was gone. He knew it for what it was. Duncan closed his mind to it. He looked around and saw that Hammer and Jack were still staring raptly down at the blazing eye.
"My brothers!"
The trees did not answer Scarecrow Jack. He'd come too far from the forest. He was in the beast's domain now. Its voice thundered in his mind, disrupting his thoughts, scattering his memories. He needed the strength of the trees.
"My brothers, come to me!"
He reached out with his mind, fighting fiercely against the voice of the beast, searching desperately for the communion of the trees that had always been his. The forest was still there, far above him. The trees and the greenery still stretched for countless miles across the forest land, and all of its ancient strength was his to call upon. The darkness pressed in around him as the beast grew stronger. Only newly awakened and barely come into its power, its voice was already nearly overpowering in its intensity.
"No! I will not serve you!"
Jack reached out one last time, and finally the trees heard him and lent him their strength. The beast's influence vanished from his mind like the fleeting memory of a bad dream, and he was free again. The bitterly cold air seared Jack's lungs, shocking him awake. He realized how close he was standing to the brink of the ledge and stepped quickly backward. McNeil nodded briefly to him, but sensed that Jack was still too shaken to be much help in tackling Hammer. The renegade guard's face worked horribly, and his hands twitched around the hilt of the infernal device, but he was unable to tear his gaze away from the great blazing eye. The beast had him now. McNeil braced himself. He had to get the infernal device away from Hammer before the beast could take control of him. Now that the beast had awakened, the Hellsword was the only chance they had of equaling the odds. McNeil moved stealthily forward and reached out to take the sword. Hammer spun around, the great longsword sweeping out in a viciously short arc. McNeil dived under the blade at the last moment, and the wind of its passing ruffled his hair. The sword bit deep into the cavern wall. As Hammer started to pull it free, Jack stepped in behind him and pinned his arms to his sides. McNeil lurched to his feet, but even as he started forward again, he saw that Hammer's face was cold and calm and empty of all emotion. Hammer had lost his last battle, and now only the beast looked out through his eyes. The outlaw struggled furiously to break Jack's hold, but the strength of the tall trees surged through Jack's arms, and Hammer couldn't break free. McNeil slammed a punch into Hammer's gut. The outlaw stared coldly back at him and struggled to raise the device and cut him down. McNeil hit him as hard as he could on the jaw, snapping Hammer's head back. It had no effect at all. McNeil punched Hammer again and again, and Hammer just ignored him. Slowly, despite everything Jack could do to hold him, he began to raise the infernal device.
Do something! I can't hold him much longer!
McNeil cut Hammer's throat with a single stroke. The outlaw didn't fall. He went on struggling, even as the color drained from his face and the blood pumped ever more feebly. Finally, the blood stopped coming, and he stopped breathing. But still, he stood there, gripping the infernal device and fighting to break free. McNeil stood gaping. Hammer broke Jack's hold and sent him staggering backwards. Hammer spun around on Jack as the Scarecrow tripped and fell. McNeil took the opening and rushed Hammer, who turned, raising the infernal device. Duncan knocked Hammer back over the crouching Jack. Wolfsbane clattered loose on the ledge as Hammer somersaulted over the forest outlaw, careening off into the all-seeing eye. Jack and McNeil watched Hammer's body fall until the distant speck disappeared into the brilliant light of the beast's eye. Finally, they both turned away from the ledge and leaned against the cavern wall while they got their breath back. McNeil felt dizzy and lightheaded from the strain, and his leg muscles trembled with fatigue, but he knew he couldn't rest yet. He looked down at the infernal device, glowing brightly on the ledge before him.
All right! Now what are we going to do?
Kill the beast!
Jack looked down at the great staring eye and then back at Wolfsbane. A sudden chill ran down his spine as he realized what McNeil meant to do, and he stared respectfully at the ranger.
You don't have to do this!
Yes, I do! It's my job, my duty!
Jack looked at him for a moment and then nodded briefly.
You're a brave man, Sergeant. Good luck.
Thanks. Going to need it. Now get the hell out of here! The tunnel that brought us down here was part of the beast's dreams. There's no telling what'll happen to it when the beast dies.
Sergeant, are you sure the device can kill it?
What else would the beast be so afraid of? Now go on. I'll join you later.
Yeah, sure. Goodbye, Sergeant.
I could run. Get away. I could run even now. But I won't.
Duncan sheathed his own sword and looked down at Wolfsbane. He didn't think he'd ever felt so scared in his life. He knelt down and took hold of Wolfsbane's hilt. He straightened up slowly. The sword lay uncannily light in his hand, despite the great length of the blade. It glowed brightly, but it was not a healthy light. And finally, McNeil discovered why Hammer had always been so reluctant to draw the device. Wolfsbane moved in his mind. A soft, seductive whisper that spoke of power and destiny and appealed to all the dark dreams and fantasies he'd ever had. McNeil shuddered helplessly as the alien presence seeped slowly through him like a horribly sweet poison. No wonder Hammer fell so quickly under the beast's control. With two such forces warring for control within him, it was inevitable he would fall to one of them.
No.
McNeil shook his head to clear it and stepped forward to the brink of the ledge. There was a thing he had to do, and he was going to do it despite everything the beast or the device or his own fear could do to stop him. He clutched the leather-wrapped sword hilt with both hands and held the infernal device up before him, blinking at the bright shining light that burned in the blade. He stepped carefully forward onto the very edge of the narrow stone ledge and looked down. Now, standing alone on the ledge and looking down into the single great eye of the beast, he finally knew the truth of fear.
There is no shame in fear, Duncan McNeil. Only in surrendering to it.
Duncan lowered the great sword so that its point was facing down toward the huge eye.
Bye, Jessica. Giles, I was always proud to work with you. Goodbye, Constance. You turned out to be a damn good witch after all. And Salamander, I'm sorry about that village.
The infernal device screamed with rage in his mind as it realized what he intended to do, but it was too late. McNeil jumped out from the ledge, diving headfirst toward the beast. The eye rushed closer, ever closer, the shimmering silver and gold rising to fill his vision, until all he could see was the eye, growing larger and larger, a sea of dazzling light. And finally, McNeil and the sword plunged into it, driven by the horrid weight of his long drop. He and the sword disappeared into the body of the beast. Then, the voice of the beast fell silent forever. In the cellar, the mists began to fade away. They sank back into the stonework and disappeared, leaving no trace of their passing. Without the gathering fog, the torchlight was suddenly brighter, less diffused, and the shadows were no longer quite so dark. Flint sat down suddenly on the blood-spattered floor and closed her eyes. Constance let her hands drop back to her sides and bowed her head tiredly.
It's dead. The beast is dead.
Are you sure?
Yes. I can't feel its presence anymore.
The dancer shrugged and sheathed his sword. He looked at Flint and moved quickly over to kneel beside her.
Oh, damn.
He saw the ragged wound where her left ear used to be. He took a handkerchief from his pocket and pressed it gently to the side of her head. She winced and opened her eyes in protest, and then lifted a hand to hold the folded handkerchief in place. She gritted her teeth as the dancer gently tied a length of rag around her head to hold the handkerchief securely. A sheen of sweat broke out on her forehead, and she felt sick and giddy from the pain, but she was still able to smile her thanks to the dancer when he looked at her anxiously.
We won, Giles. We actually won.
Looks that way, Jessica.
If this is what victory feels like, I'd hate to be around at one of your defeats.
Flint looked around quickly, and with the dancer's help, moved over to sit beside the fallen bowman. He lay on his back, glaring up at the ceiling with pain-filled eyes. A gaping hole in his gut revealed broken and splintered ribs. Only his hands kept his intestines from falling out. Blood soaked his clothes and welled out from beneath him in a widening pool. More blood clung to his mouth and chin. He couldn't even raise his head to look at Flint when she took one of his hands in both of hers. Flint looked at the dancer, who shook his head slightly. Constance knelt down beside Flint.
Can you do anything for him, Constance?
I've no magic left. I used it all. It'll be some time before any of it returns.
And I don't have much time. Typical. My luck was always bad.
Lie still.
What for? Can't get any worse. You there, Dancer?
Yes, Wild. I'm here.
This is a death wound. But it's a bloody slow one. Going to take me some time to die. And I'd rather not be around while it's happening. End it for me now, Dancer. Let me go out with some dignity at least.
Don't talk like that. There's still a chance.
No, there isn't.
Flint mopped some of the sweat from his face with her sleeve. Wild grinned harshly.
You always were the soft one, Jess. How about a kiss, eh? Just to say goodbye. And then, when we're through, the dancer can let me go on a high note.
Flint smiled despite herself, holding back tears.
You always were a romantic, Edmund.
She leaned forward, wiped some of the blood from his mouth with her sleeve, and kissed him tenderly. As she did, Wild's hand came up and gave her left breast a playful squeeze. Flint straightened up, half shocked and half laughing. Wild nodded to the dancer, and he leaned forward and slipped his dagger expertly into Wilde's heart. The bowman stiffened and then grinned up at Flint.
Romantic. My arse.
The light went out of his eyes. Flint reached out with a shaking hand and gently closed his eyes for him.
Goodbye, Edmund. I wish things could have been different.
Jessica.
The dancer met her gaze steadily.
I had to do it, Jessica.
Of course you did. Thank you, Giles.
What do we do now? The trolls are dead, the beast is dead. But what about Duncan and Jack and Hammer? What are we going to do?
We're going to rest a while and get our strength back. Duncan and the others will be back soon.
But what if they're not? What if they don't come back?
Then we go down and look for them.
Scarecrow Jack staggered on through the earth tunnel, holding the lantern out before him with an aching arm. He'd lost track of how long he'd been in the tunnel, but his feet hurt, and the weight of the lantern had become almost too heavy to bear. He trudged doggedly on. He tried reaching out to the forest as he had done before, but there was nothing there. He was too tired and too far away. His head pounded unmercifully, and he found it hard to concentrate. It was nothing serious, he knew that, just strain and tiredness. A few hours' sleep and he'd be fine. He was tempted to lie down and sleep for a while on the packed earth of the tunnel floor, but somewhere deep inside him he knew if he lay down here, he might never find the strength to get up again. So he plodded on, head hanging tiredly down, putting one foot in front of the other over and over again. After a while, the shadows up ahead seemed strangely different. Jack held the lantern higher and squinted against the gloom. His heart leaped as the patterns of light and darkness ahead of him resolved themselves into a set of rough wooden steps leading upwards. He was almost there. All he had to do was climb the steps and clamber out through the trapdoor, and he would be free of the darkness and among friends again. He almost ran up the simple wooden slats, pushing himself on as fast as his aching legs would carry him. He held the lantern out as far ahead of him as his arm could reach, hoping for a glimpse of the trapdoor that would let him back into the fort cellar. But for a long time, there were only the stairs and the darkness. It wasn't until some of the frost in his hair began to melt and run down his face like tears that he realized the air wasn't as cold as it had been. In fact, it was almost bordering on warm. His hands and feet and face tingled with returning feeling as the numbness slowly left them. He began to smile until he was grinning so hard his cheeks hurt. The trapdoor suddenly appeared above him, and he lurched to a halt before he slammed his head into it. He put the lantern down on the top step and placed both his hands against the trapdoor. It shifted uneasily and then rose an inch or two. Jack forced the trapdoor up another inch. McNeil always made it look so easy. And then suddenly the weight was gone as the trapdoor yanked away from him. Light spilled down through the opening and Jack blinked up into it. Strong hands reached down to help him, and finally Scarecrow Jack left the tunnels in the earth and emerged into the light of the cellar. Flint and the dancer let the trapdoor slam shut behind him, and Constance helped Jack sit down before his weary legs gave way. He grinned happily about him. Then he saw the look in their eyes, and his smile disappeared as he realized he had bad news to tell them, as well as good.
I'm the only one. Hammer and Sergeant McNeil won't be coming back.
They're both dead?
Hammer is. And I'm pretty sure the Sergeant is too. He gave up his life to destroy the beast.
What happened?
Sergeant McNeil used Wolfsbane against the beast.
Jack dropped his eyes for a moment and then raised them to look squarely at the dancer.
I would have used the sword, but he wouldn't let me. He said it was his duty. He was a brave man. Bravest I ever met.
Yes, he was.
They stood in silence for a while, all lost in their own thoughts. Constance felt suddenly exhausted. She'd been saving what little strength she had left to welcome McNeil back, and now it seemed she had no use for it. He was dead. She never found the right moment to tell him how she felt about him. And now she never would.
What happened to Hammer?
He ran into something worse than him.
Jack looked about him, taking in the dead trolls and the ranger's wounds for the first time.
You seem to have kept busy while we were gone.
We managed to keep from being bored.
We found the gold. It's all there. I'll draw you a map later on.
What about the missing people?
I'll tell you later. It's a long story, and not a pretty one.
His eyes fell upon Wilde's unmoving body. Jack looked at it for a while, not sure how he felt.
Did he die well?
Yes. He gave his life to save mine.
Oh. I never liked him, but he was good with a bow. At least he died in a good cause. He once was a hero, you know.
Yes, I know.
She looked hard at Jack.
Are you sure Duncan is dead?
He has to be. He knew he was going to die when he took on the beast. And so did I.
But did you actually see the body?
Well, no, I didn't.
Then there's a chance he's still alive.
The dancer turned to Constance.
Constance, can't you see where he is? What's happened to him?
I'm sorry. I've nothing left. It'll be weeks before I can see anything again.
He's dead. I'm sorry, but he has to be.
Flint started to say something and then stopped, and for a long time nobody said anything.
All right, let's get out of here. We can clean up and sleep in the dining hall for tonight. Tomorrow we'll go down into the tunnels and see if we can recover Duncan's body.
Right. We can't leave him here alone.
Duncan McNeil woke up slowly. His whole body ached, and all the length of his back was a single great stabbing pain.
Oh.
He tried to raise his head, but for the moment, even that was beyond him. He opened his eyes, but everything stayed dark. He lay quietly, gathering what was left of his strength, and tried to figure out where the hell he was. There was a hard, unyielding surface beneath his aching back, but one arm and both his feet seemed to be hanging over its edges. An appalling smell filled the air all around him, a dank, oppressive stench of rotting foulness that made him want to retch. He tried to lift his head again, and this time succeeded. He still couldn't see anything.
Of course not. It's dark down here. Down here.
Memories returned in a rush, and his heart missed a beat as he remembered falling toward the giant, glowing eye. He thrashed about him in the dark, trying to find something to grab onto, and then froze as he realized he was lying on something precariously narrow, with an unknown drop to either side of him. He felt about him a little more cautiously, and his hands encountered something soft and unpleasantly yielding. He snatched his hand away and lay very still while his heart and breathing returned to normal. The first thing to do was to shed some light on the subject. He reached carefully into his pocket and brought out the inch of candle stub he always carried with him for emergencies. Lighting the wax stub with flint and steel from his boot, whilst being very careful not to overbalance himself, turned out to be a nightmare in itself. But finally, he got the wick to light and held the candle up before him. He was lying on a narrow shelf of discolored bone, surrounded by dark walls of rotting flesh. If he looked up, he could see above him the beginnings of a broad tunnel reaching up through the decaying meat. Another equally broad tunnel fell away beneath him. McNeil sat up cautiously on the ledge of bone, cradling the candle stub carefully in his shaking hands. He finally knew where he was. He was in the body of the beast. He'd plunged into the eye and through it, and fallen on into the head of the beast, destroying its mind. The liquid in the massive eyeball must have cushioned his fall enough so that when he finally hit the more solid flesh beyond it, the shock of the impact hadn't been enough to kill him. At some point, he must have dropped the infernal device. It carried on without him, rotting its way deeper into the beast's mind and leaving behind it the tunnel beneath his ledge. There was no knowing how deep Wolfsbane bored, but it must have gone deep enough. The beast lay dead. McNeil only had to look around to know that. Everywhere he looked was rotten with decay. And the infernal device was gone, lost deep in the decomposing body of the beast.
And there it can stay. For all of me.
He clambered unsteadily to his feet and looked up at the tunnel above him. The opening sat just above his head, easily within reach. It was the only way out, much as he disliked the thought. McNeil allowed a trickle of melted wax to fall onto the absorbent cloth of the shirt over his shoulder, and used it to stick the wax stub firmly in place. He was drenched from head to foot with foul-smelling slime from his passage through the eye, but the candle stub seemed more or less secure. He pulled himself up into the wide shaft. His arms groaned with the effort, but eventually he pulled himself high enough for his feet to find the first footholds, and then the long climb began. In later years, he was only to remember most of it in his worst nightmares. The journey passed in a kind of daze, and he remembered little of it, even in his dreams, possibly because he was too tired to be scared anymore. He made his way along the ledge and trudged wearily back up the tunnel that led to the wooden steps and the cellar. He wasn't thinking much by this stage. It was only the pain and the tiredness and his own dogged refusal to give in. His candle stub had pretty much run out by the time he finally reached the wooden steps.
Great.
Duncan clawed his way up the steps in pitch darkness after the light suddenly guttered and went out. The first he knew of reaching the closed trap door was when he banged his head against it. Duncan froze, and his hand came into contact with something on the step. He paused, studying the feel of it in his memory as he rubbed his head. It hadn't seemed alive. It had felt cold, like metal or glass. He reached out again carefully, and his fingers found the familiar shape of his lantern. McNeil smiled widely in the darkness.
So, Jack made it back at least.
Duncan took out his flint and steel and lit the lantern with trembling fingers. The sudden light was blinding, and tears ran down his face. He waited patiently till his eyes had adjusted to the new light, and then put his shoulder against the underside of the trapdoor. Duncan burst upwards with all his strength. For one heartbreaking moment, he thought the damn thing wasn't going to budge, and then it suddenly rose a good 3 inches, almost throwing him off balance. He quickly regained his footing and pushed again. The trapdoor swung high enough for him to push it over backwards, and it fell to the stone floor. Duncan stepped up into the dark, abandoned cellar. He rested only a moment before checking through the piled-up bodies for signs of his friends. Among all the trolls, there was only one human body. Wild. McNeil started the long, slow journey out of the cellar and back through the warren of passageways that would take him eventually to the outside world. He wondered if the others had already gone, leaving him alone in the fort. He had no way of knowing how long he'd spent unconscious in the body of the beast. But if they hadn't left yet, they were probably still in the dining hall. He needed the company of friends, so he set off in the direction of the dining hall and hoped. The dancer had been sitting on guard, and he was on his feet, sword in hand, before echoes had even begun to ring. But when he saw who it was, his jaw dropped, and he stood, frozen in place. Jack, Flint, and Constance sat up bleary-eyed from sleep and stared blankly at the grisly apparition in the doorway. And then the shock of the moment passed, and all four of them hurried forward to greet him.
McNeil!
Constance got there first and hugged McNeil ferociously, despite the blood and slime that soaked his clothes.
You're alive! Oh, Duncan, I knew you had to be alive! I knew it!
Her feelings ran wild within her, making her suddenly inarticulate, but that didn't matter. There'd be time to tell him about those feelings later. There would be time for many things now. Finally, she let him go, and the others took it in turn to hug him and slap him on the back and shoulders. All the exuberance was suddenly too much for McNeil, and he had to sit down quickly before he fell down. Constance wrapped a blanket around his shoulders to keep out the cold. Flint handed him a wine flask, and he nodded his thanks.
All right, tell us what happened. You've been missing for hours. Did you really kill the beast?
Oh, yes. It's dead.
He told them his story, and they sat around him in silent awe, like children listening to the village storyteller. When he was finished, no one said anything for a long time.
So, Wolfsbane has lost a game. I can't say I'm sorry to see the back of it.
Damn thing gave me the creeps.
Right. As far as my official report is concerned, it's lost without a trace. I think it's better for everyone if it stays that way.
Duncan allowed himself the luxury of a long, slow stretch.
Now, my friends, if you'll excuse me, I think I'm going to lose these clothes and crawl into my sleeping roll and sleep for a week. Good night, and pleasant dreams.
In the end, he slept about 10 hours. It was late in the afternoon when he finally woke up. Every muscle he had complained loudly, but the long sleep took the edge off his pains, and he thought he could live with them now. Flint and the dancer sat not too far away, talking quietly. Constance was preparing a meal of cold field rations at one of the tables. There was no sign of Scarecrow Jack. McNeil smiled contentedly. It felt good to be alive. He lay back in his bedroll and stared up at the ceiling. In a strange way, he felt very much at peace with himself. Down in the darkness, under the gaze of the beast, he tested his courage and found it sound. He'd never been more scared in his life, but still, when it mattered, he did the right thing. It meant a lot to him, knowing that.
Oh.
He emerged reluctantly from his blankets and climbed into his spare set of clothes. One look at the stained and slime-drenched clothes he wore previously was enough to convince him they were beyond saving. He raised his hands to his face and sniffed suspiciously at them.
Oh.
Despite a thorough washing the night before, he could still smell the foul stench of the beast. Maybe when the reinforcements arrived, they'd have someone with them who could repair the hot water boilers, and he could have a good long soak in a very hot bath. McNeil smiled, savoring the thought, and moved over to join Constance at the table. She smiled back at him and passed him some of the cold field rations. It was a continuing matter for debate among all guards as to whether field rations tasted worse cooked or cold. Most guards usually ended up deciding they tasted equally vile either way. McNeil wasn't all that hungry anyway, but since Constance had gone to the trouble of preparing the meal, he supposed he'd better eat some of it, or she'd be upset. After a few mouthfuls, he discovered he was hungry after all, ate the lot, and even wished there were more. He pushed back the empty plate and looked up to find Constance sitting patiently beside him.
Jack's waiting in the courtyard. He doesn't like being indoors, but he didn't want to leave without saying goodbye.
Strictly speaking, I ought to arrest him, but...
Yes, but...
They shared a smile. McNeil slowly got up from the table and headed for the door. Flint and the dancer broke off their conversation and got up to follow him. Constance brought up the rear, as usual. There were no clouds in the sky, and the warm sunlight had dried off most of the stonework. Scarecrow Jack stood by the open main gates, staring out at the forest. He looked around as the ranger approached and nodded politely.
You're looking better, Sergeant McNeil. Is there anything I can do for you before I go?
I don't think so.
Despite Jack's relaxed appearance, he was clearly ready to turn and run for the trees at the first sign of any attempt to arrest him. Old habits die hard. McNeil smiled warmly at Jack to reassure him.
In fact, as far as my official report is concerned, you were never here. But do me a favor. Try and stay out of trouble until we've left the area. I'd hate to be ordered to hunt you down.
What makes you think you could find me?
Jack turned away and looked at the forest.
You don't have to go. After all your help, after all you've done, I'm sure we could get you a pardon. You could return to your home, to your family, make a new life for yourself.
The forest is my home and my family. I wouldn't leave it for a dozen pardons. Thanks anyway, Constance. Goodbye, my friends.
He grinned quickly at them and then ran through the gates and out into the clearing. For a while, his running figure shone outlined against the bright sunshine. Then he reached the trees. His camouflage of rags blended him into the forest, and he was gone.
I have a strong feeling we should have gone down into the tunnels and counted those bags of gold before we let him go.
I wouldn't have begrudged him a bag or two, but I doubt he took a single coin with him. What use is gold in the forest? Come on. We ought to clean up some of this mess before the reinforcements get here. We've still got to agree on what story we're going to tell them.
Right. They'd never believe the truth. I was here, and I don't believe half of it.
The four rangers went back into the fort, which stood clean and open, beneath a sun that shone down from a cloudless sky. Down Among the Dead Men is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 1994, Simon R. Green, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2011, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. performed by Terence Aselford, Michael Glenn, Yasmin Toison, Elizabeth Jernigan, Danny Gavigan, David Coyne, Andy Clements, Joseph Thornhill, Casey Platt, Tim Getman, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Nathaniel Perry. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Book adapted for graphic audio by Timothy Lynch. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry. The Forest Kingdom Saga theme was composed by Dan Sondak. Additional original music by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Down Among the Dead Men, be sure to look for Simon R. Green's Blue Moon Rising and Beyond the Blue Moon. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, audio guides, and podcasts. Keep listening for a preview of other thrilling titles in Graphic Audio.
If you've done bad things your whole life, but you die doing something good, do you think that makes up for all the bad?
No.
Me neither.
But it's better than nothing. Orcholum is merciful.
Wonder if you'll say that after they're done with your village.
Gavin Guile is the Prism, the most powerful man in the world. He is High Priest and Emperor, a man whose power, wit, and charm are all that preserves a tenuous peace. A peace that is slowly rotting from the inside out.
This is all that's left of what was once a great civilization. Statues of great men. Broken by the pygmies who followed. Let me tell you something you already know. Something that all of you have believed, but no one dared to say. The wrong Guile won the Prism's war. They killed him because they were worried he would change everything. They feared him because Dazen Guile wanted to free us. Dazen knew that light cannot be chained.
As darkness slowly encroaches upon the land, Gavin receives a mysterious letter.
I'm dying, Gavin. It's time you meet your son, Kip. Lena.
As Gavin races to find his son, he learns of a new and dangerous threat to his empire. A man who calls himself King.
Your time is finished. Yours and the Chromarias. You're done! Light cannot be chained. Know this, Prism. We will take back what you've stolen. The horrors of your reign are almost at an end. And when it ends, I will be there. This I swear!
With the death of his empire looming, Gavin will be forced to wage a war on multiple fronts. But little does he know, his assassin may be looking right before his very eyes.
You're a stupid, stupid boy, Kip. But maybe a dull sword can go where a sharp one wouldn't be allowed. Don't you forget this. Don't listen to him, you hear me? He's a liar. You will not fail me in this, Kip. You learn, and then you kill him.
Yes, Mother?
Kip, if you ever loved me, avenge me. Swear it by your worthless soul, Kip.
I swear to avenge you, Mother, by my very soul.
Don't miss the beginning of the end in Brent Week's critically acclaimed new series, The Lightbringer Trilogy. Book 1, The Black Prism, parts 1-3. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.